The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
It is Friday, January 13th. Wahaha, Friday the 13th, 2023. And it is indeed a heck of a morning. Live on the MMA Fighting Twitter spaces, you can hear the show in its entirety. Shortly thereafter on the MMA Fighting Podcasting Network. I am Mike Heck. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on the eve of a UFC event. UFC Vegas 67 going down tomorrow. At the Apex, the main event was not the main event we thought we were going to have, but we got one, and they're going to weigh in very soon. It is going to be a light heavyweight matchup between a couple of middleweights. Sean Strickland stepping in on short notice to replace Kelvin Gastelum, and he will face Nasruddin Imavov. That card going down tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern. So get excited, everybody. I know a lot of you have been just been waiting. It's been a lot of time in between UFC events, and now we have one back. The card is it's okay. I think the main card is pretty good. Prelims, there's some things that I'm interested in, but a lot of these fights, at least on paper and via the betting odds, kind of look like, I'm not going to say squash matches, but a lot of one-way traffic potential. But there are some obviously very interesting storylines in the prelims. Jimmy Flick coming back from his retirement to fight Charles Johnson. We got Javid Basharat taking on Mateus Mendonca, a couple of undefeated bantamweight prospects. That should be a lot of fun. Couple of flyweight fights, so I know Jed Meshew and Connor Burks are all excited about the potential of flyweight unders, but the main card is pretty solid. Umar Nurmagomedov versus Hayony Barcelos. I have to look at the betting lines on that one right now because I was stunned when I looked at it the other day, but let's take a current gander at that one right now. It is, according to our friends at DraftKings, Umar Nurmagomedov minus 975. The comeback on Hayony Barcelos is plus 675. It's just kind of surprisingly high to me. I think Umar is probably going to win that fight, but minus four figures. I didn't see that coming, if we're being honest. Big one at 135 for the ladies. We haven't had a women's bantamweight fight in a long time. Raquel Pennington looking to continue her surge against another surging contender, Caitlin Vieira, who could find her way into a title fight if victorious. A fresh matchup for Amanda Nunes. Of course, Raquel Pennington has fought Amanda Nunes in the past, but Raquel has been pretty impressive as of late. Fun one between Puna Soriano and Roman Kopylov. That should be a lot of fun. Those two guys are just going to chuck them until somebody falls, more than likely. I don't think we're going to see a ton of grappling and takedown attempts in that fight. And then the co-main event's a banger. Dan Ige versus Damon Jackson. Very interested to see what happens in that fight. And there's a fun little story with Puna Soriano and Dan Ige. It's been almost a lifelong dream for those two guys to fight on the same UFC card. They have known each other since they were kids, went to high school together. They went to college together. They've been together through the good times and the bad. Dan Ige said, I want to move to Las Vegas and train at Extreme Couture. And Puna was like, all right, I'll come too. And they both have gone through their careers. And here we go. Tomorrow, they get to fight on the same card. I spoke with Eric Nixick. It's a very cool story. I wrote that up for the site, so that's going to be dropping before that fight happens. So we could talk about that, but it is Friday. So on this show, it's a free-for-all Friday. So we could talk about MMA. We could talk about tomorrow's card. We could talk about some of the news and notes. If you guys have other questions about some news or some rumor and innuendo, we could talk about that. We could talk about stuff outside of MMA if you want as well. That's what this Friday show is all about. And at this point, my monologue is over. Let's go to you guys and gals to see what is on your mind. We will start with Zach. Hello, Zach.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing? Glad to have UFC back this weekend. But I'm actually going to go to the PFL for a minute. I don't remember if we talked about this, but I saw the other day and I remember that PFL is moving to DAZN now, not ESPN+. I actually remember debating with some of my friends about this, finding it interesting because I feel like PFL had a good thing with ESPN Plus in the sense that, like, if you were a UFC fan, you went there and you realized, oh, there's another promotion on that platform, you know, PFL, you can check it out. It was pretty accessible. Now, I don't know how many people have DAZN or if at all, too many people, but do you think it was the right move for them to get away from the UFC and kind of stick with their own MMA stuff? Or do you think they almost benefited more from being on that same platform as the UFC where it's easy to find more MMA? I found that interesting. And then since it is free for all Friday, I thought I'd ask, because you mentioned it a little earlier on another episode this week about, you know, the idea that this could be a 30 for 30. So it made my mind brew a little bit about, since we had the really good Chuck Tito 30 for 30 a few years ago, if you had three fighters, let's say current or past, that you think would make good 30 for 30 specials on, which one would they be? Mike, have a great weekend.
Thanks, man. Lee Murray, for sure. John Jones is going to be another one. And I would love to – I mean, there's a lot, honestly. There's a lot. But those two stick out. And maybe a 30 for 30 on the Conor McGregor-Nate Diaz rivalry, that the build to those two fights in 2016. Or just – maybe just the UFC in 2016 as a whole. I think that would be just a really fascinating story. That's still the biggest year in the history of MMA in terms of news, with everything that happened at UFC 200, UFC 199, everything that happened there, the sale of the company, Conor and Nate, Conor winning the second belt. I mean, just so much happened that year. I'd love to kind of have a retrospective of some of the behind the scenes stuff with that. The PFL thing with DAZN, it's not for the United States. They're going to be on ESPN Plus in the U.S. So you don't have to worry about that if you live in the States. They've partnered with DAZN for, I think it's like 50-something international countries. So it's still going to be on ESPN Plus. You don't have to worry about that. But it's not like all their cards are going to be on DAZN for everybody. It's just international markets. It's just an international deal for the PFL, as far as I'm aware, unless something changed along the way and I totally missed it. I just went and looked it up as you were talking to me, and the release on DAZN was it's going to be like their international partner for the UK, because they're going to Europe and everything. They're going to have the UK series and the Europe series, and there's a partnership there between PFL and DAZN. But in the States, nothing changes. Because I there's just no way that ESPN is getting into it with PFL for like a 1 year deal. Just don't see it. So yeah, it looks like they're sticking around, and at least in the States, but internationally, DAZN will be the home for a lot of different events. So that's where we're at. Let's see what our good buddy Double A has to say on this Free For All Friday. What's up, buddy?
Oh yeah,
I'm good.
I've just got one. I read today that Veronica Veronica Hardy now is being matched up with Juliana Miller for London. Is the two questions? Is that confirmed? And second, this is no disrespect to Veronica. I'm sort of want your thoughts on what would Juliana Miller have to gain coming off of Tough and having her first fight in the UFC be someone who only has one win in the promotion. Like, in my opinion, you know, you come off Tough and you want to make a good impression. Is that really like what she would gain here? Like, I don't know. Okay. Have a heck of a morning, Mike. Everyone else, have a heck of a morning. Take care of yourselves and peace.
Thank you. Yes, I saw this. As a matter of fact, we were working on confirming this last night. I guess Juliana announced it herself on a podcast last night that the fight was happening. So I would assume if a fighter is coming out and publicly saying that the fight's going to happen, it's probably going to happen. I'm fine with this one. I'm fine with this one. And the biggest reason why is she doesn't have a ton of experience as a professional fighter. I mean, she's only been her first amateur fight was in 2017, fought a handful of times, made her pro debut in 2019, did a lot of grappling, fought twice in 2020, won both of those fights, lost to Claire Guthrie and Invicta in 2021, did some more grappling, and then went on The Ultimate Fighter in 2022 and beat Claire right back, beat Caitlin Neal, and then fought in the finals against Brogan Walker and finished her. So she's only 3-1. This is only going to be her fifth pro fight. And I like the matchup because what was that fight? That was in August, so this will be March. That's 4-7 month break, and you want to build some momentum. Like, she built a ton of momentum on the season going into that fight with Brogan Walker. They built like a nice little rivalry on the show. As far as I know, that's what AK told me, because he's the Tough fan. I cannot watch that show anymore. It's horrendous to me, just because it's the same damn show it was 25 years ago or 20 years ago, whenever it started. All these seasons ago, it's the exact same freaking show. But she built a ton of momentum. She's got a super personality. And there's no need to just chuck her in there with like a top 15 fighter right now. Let's just get her feet wet. Let her do her thing. Let's build some momentum. She's still very young. She's 26, only 4 pro fights. Let's build some sea legs, you know? Let's see what she's got. Fighting somebody with some experience. She'll probably, just kind of looking at the matchup on paper, just in general, she'll probably, I don't know if style is the right word, but it's a very suitable matchup for her. It's a matchup to try to get her over and to try to build this momentum. There's no need to rush her at 3-1. So I'm fine with the matchup. I'm good with it. And, you know, like I said, she announced it herself. So I think it's going to happen. I'm confident that it will happen. Throw her on that London car with that crowd, they'll probably love her. We'll see how she does. Walk before we run. That's what I like to say with some of these fighters who don't have a ton of professional experience. Abzwalia, hello. Abzwalia, are you there?
Hey, what's up, Wim? What's up? Sorry, I just had some mic issues. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, good. I just want to ask, is there any news on what's going to happen with Aljamain Sterling regarding his title shot, because we already know that he's probably injured. Is there any like confirmation as to when he possibly could fight later on, down the line during the year?
So, I mean, this is just according to him. Seems like he just needs like an extra month. That's, I mean, that's what I had seen on Twitter. Just if you can wait a month, let's go. But it seems like Cejudo and Sean O'Malley are kind of angling for their own fight. And we talked about this on BTL yesterday. We're trying to figure out what they're going to do for March 4th, because in some respects, March 18th, Leon Edwards told, apparently Leon Edwards told Michael Bisping on his podcast that he was told by the UFC that Kamaru Usman is going to fight March 18th, and Usman's already getting ready for it. So I think some of those rumors and some of that stuff that was said was, like I've told you a million times, as far as I knew and everybody else at the site knew that is privy to this information, that was the plan. There was no talks really about Masvidal stepping in or anything like that. They just haven't officially announced that fight yet. So I assume that one's going to happen on March 18th. But March 4th, it's a barren wasteland right now. I mean, there's fights on the card, but we don't have a title fight. We don't have a main event. We don't have anything right now. And the two fights that it seemed like the promotion was targeting was Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, which if you read our article on MMA fighting, if you watch my interview with Eric Nixick, it doesn't seem like we're ruling this out at this point, but it seems like some of the confidence that fight happens March 4th is a little bit lower than it was before. Eric Nixick said he's confident the fight will happen first half of 2023, but he's 50-50 it happens March 4th. But again, that's not ruling it out. As Eric told me, if UFC calls him and says, or you know, Francis and his team calls him and says, we're fighting March 4th, and he will have Francis ready for March 4th. So, but to me, there's just a lot to this right now. The fact that Francis hasn't officially resigned yet, the fact that this fight hasn't been officially booked yet concerns me, and we're less than 2 months away. So am I confident the fight happens? Yes. Do I think it'll happen March 4th? I'm probably with Eric right now, 50-50. I might even be a little less confident, but I'm not saying, I still think the fight will happen. And then what do we do with the rest of the card? Because the other one was Aljamain Sterling versus Henry Cejudo. And now Sterling's not going to be able to fight in March. Do you do Cejudo versus Sean O'Malley on that card for just chuck an interim title on there? Like, it doesn't make sense to do an interim title, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's a 5-round fight. Fighters get a little extra pay because it's a title fight, and Lord knows we need something on this card right now. Do they go that route, or they just say, huh, we'll just wait and do Cejudo Sterling down the line? For me, I would rather see Cejudo fight Sean O'Malley. I don't need to go into this any more than I already have. I just want to see Henry fight somebody else. And if it's an interim title fight with Sean O'Malley, I'm okay with that. That shows me that he cares. That shows me that he's serious in some way about this. And I just want to see the man fight. I just want to see what he can do. And I've always advocated that Henry should fight somebody else, not Aljo anyways. And then he could fight Aljo if he beat Sean O'Malley. And I think it's a pretty favorable matchup for him. So do they just go ahead and do that, or do they wait? March 4th needs help right now. And then maybe I don't know if that's the main event. Maybe it could be. And then maybe you try to convince Amanda Nunes or Valentina Shevchenko to fight on that card in the co-main event slot. I don't know. I wonder if they're getting Khamzat Chimaev on the phone right now saying, what could we do? What could we do? Maybe, I don't know. I honestly, I have no idea what they're going to do at this point, but it seems like O'Malley and Cejudo are trying to lobby for a fight March 4th themselves. So I don't know what's going to happen. We got decisions to make, hopefully by the pay-per-view next Saturday. Hopefully while we're doing our little plug here, UFC 283 live watch party next Saturday, we can react to this news and some sort of announcements about March 4th, because right now we got nothing, and that's not good. So the answer to your question about Aljo, no idea. My head tells me they'll probably go with Cejudo O'Malley. I don't see why not. I mean, why at this point, what else are you going to do? I'd love to, like, if John Jones is ready to fight March 4th, I agree with what Ariel said on Wednesday. Try to trot him out there. It doesn't have to be a title fight. Just chuck him in there with anybody. Throw him in there with Tai Tuivasa. Throw him in there with whoever. Just get him in there. That's a big deal. And then if we need to do a title fight, sure, we could do Cejudo and O'Malley interim title. Cool. I'm all right with that. And then let Sterling heal up and May, June, July, unify the belts. I'm cool with that. But we got to do something because the clock is ticking on that March 4th card.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Let's go to the AM. AM, are you there? You're muted right now. So if you're saying anything, I cannot hear you. All right, try again. Hop right in. It is a free-for-all Friday, so we can talk about whatever is on your mind on this lovely Friday. Let's go to Viking MMA. Hi, Viking.
So, Jared Cannonier recently said that Khamzat needs to fight top five or top three middleweights before getting his middleweight title shot, which means Khamzat has to fight Cannonier or Rob Whittaker or Adesanya. For me, it's very interesting match between Cannonier versus Khamzat, because no, Whittaker tried to take Cannonier down but couldn't do it. Derek Brunson took him down but couldn't hold and control him on the ground. And because of that, I just want to see that fight because of the wrestling of Khamzat Chimaev, which is insane. So what are your thoughts on that? And do you think UFC will fast track Khamzat against Pereira if he wins against Izzy, which he will? And both of them had a back and forth on Twitter, Alex Pereira and Khamzat. So what are the chances of Khamzat getting middleweight title shot? Thank you.
Right now, probably better than I thought initially, only because of what we just talked about. March 4th's got nothing. We got nothing. And who knows? Maybe John's like, nope, I'm only fighting Ngannou. Or maybe Cejudo O'Malley isn't enough. And the UFC just calls Chimaev and Pereira and offers them a whole bag of money to just fight March 4th for the title. Who knows? Maybe they'll do Robert Whittaker while Izzy gets ready. I don't know. But I feel like the fact that March 4th has nothing right now in terms of a main event and title fights and things that would put fans in position to A, buy tickets, and B, spend $80 on a pay-per-view, which, by the way, would be the first of two in the month of March, you got to do something. So to me, almost every option is kind of on the table here because of that date. Now, if we find out in the next day or two that they have a main event booked, and then this is all for naught right now. But I think everything's kind of on the table at this point, considering what they wanted and kind of where we're at right now. So if you asked me like a month ago, I would say there's no chance Khamzat would get a title shot right now at 185. But considering that they're in full scramble mode, more than likely, I'm not ruling anything out. And I have no insight to this at all. But I'm just saying, knowing the UFC and how they could put things together quickly, things that are kind of out of the box, I think everything's kind of in play. But if you want to do Khamzat versus Cannonier, I'm cool with that. I think you try to get Khamzat on that March 4th card at this point, and if Cannonier's down, then do it. He ain't going to fight Izzy, because I think in the UFC's eyes, if they can get things to work out, they'll go back to that well, because I just don't think. Look, I have a lot of respect for Alex Pereira. That win over Izzy was incredible. That comeback, all of that was excellent. My dog is barking. Okay. You're barking at nothing like you always do, but it's all good. My dog has suddenly found his voice. It took him like 3 years, but now he's got his voice and just barks at everything. It drives me crazy. So like every single show I've done this year, he has barked at some point for no freaking reason. Thank you, Shiloh, for your appearance on the program. Yeah. So everything's in play, I think. Everything's in play. Khamzat Cannonier is fine. Khamzat Whittaker is super interesting. And like I said, I have a lot of respect for Alex Pereira. I would pick Khamzat in the flip of a hat to beat Alex Pereira. I mean, Pereira could crack, man. He could knock anybody out. But as much improved as Pereira's defense has been from a grappling standpoint, this is Khamzat Chimaev, man. This is Khamzat Chimaev. And I'm picking Khamzat against pretty much everybody that he could potentially fight right now. There are a couple of interesting ones. I think Colby would be interesting. And I think Whittaker would be a really interesting fight. So we'll see what happens. And maybe they'll just chuck Chimaev right in there with Pereira. Who knows? Like I said, they got to fill some spots and some pretty important ones. Let's go to Toke. Hey, Toke.
A short comment on the whole Dana White press conference thing, and then I have another thing to ask. So firstly,
sure.
As you know, I am educated as a journalist, but I have worked in communications. And the way that UFC did this with a surprise press conference with Dana White is so textbook that it's disgusting. I mean, giving the whole controlling the narrative and giving the journalists no time to prepare at all is textbook how you kind of get the narrative out that you want out. So first, I think that was a very calculated move from their side, just to say for him to go out with his head down and act like it's going to have real consequences when it's not. But, you know, he seems remorseful, and then he tries to create a positive narrative. So, and the other question I have is, did you hear it's difficult, how do I say this? Did you see Second Take? And what I mean by that is the First Take's Second Take on the Dana White press conference and all of that entails, because they did somehow better themselves a little bit, mostly because the host that sits beside Stephen A. Smith actually went in and said that he does not get to set the punishment, and it can't be the same as they would give the fighters, because he's in a position of power, which the fighters are not. So I thought that was interesting, and getting to know how close Stephen A. and Dana are in business relations was also kind of interesting, which is probably why Stephen A. has been so quiet as he has. Okay, that was all from me, so I'll hang up now. See ya.
I've not seen the video. I've seen it out there. I have not watched it yet. I saw a couple of people comment on it. The problem is, and this is not the same, so I don't want to get this twisted, but we remember the first attempt. It's like, how many times have I come on here and talked about how many times like Bilal Muhammad has fumbled the ball at like the 3-yard line? Bilal Muhammad had multiple chances after big wins to call out Khamzat Chimaev, and he didn't do it. He made callouts that made no sense, and then by the time he did the media run, he would call out Khamzat, and nobody cared because he didn't call him out when the lights were at their brightest and people were just glued to the TV wondering what he was going to say. And when this was brought up, originally with Stephen and Molly, it was a disaster. It was horrible. To me, if you're not going to speak truthfully on it, then don't even talk about it. Don't even talk about it. And I can't, I mean, it was just horrible. And I don't think, like, I haven't seen the video. I don't know what Stephen and Molly said. I can't imagine they said anything that's going to make me forget their first attempt. Molly saying, we don't judge people at their lowest moments. Bullshit. That's your whole fucking show, is you judge people at their lowest moments. But because somebody you know, and it was just horrible. And the graphic of Dana White, the graphic was Dana White apologizes. Like, get off me. Get off me with that. And to your first point about the scrum, I completely agree with you. And I said this, it was a brilliant move on his part. It was brilliant. And I give the people in the room credit. Like, John Morgan did a great job. He asked the right questions. But he also opened things up for follow-ups, and there were follow-ups that were not asked that I would have asked. And again, I'm not trying to dump on anybody there, because they didn't expect him to come. They expected Puna Soriano to come strolling in there with a big smile on his face, and all of a sudden Dana walks in, and they're like, oh, shit. But when Dana said the thing about me being punished and me having repercussions and me being suspended and walking away, that doesn't hurt me, it hurts the company, I would have 1,000,000% asked, how? How? Because I don't buy that. I don't think it's true. I think the machine moves on its own, whether he's there or not. And I'm not going to go into more of this, but you can make a strong case. And believe me when I tell you, I have talked to dozens of fighters off the record since this thing happened. It would be a much more positive working environment for the fighters if Dana was not there. Because they all tell me this. They've all said this unanimously in these conversations. And to address one more thing that I'll say, and we talked about this on BTL yesterday. For those people out here who are listening right now that are just rolling their eyes and they're saying, oh, move on. Don't blame me. Send that venom elsewhere. Send that venom to the UFC and send it to Endeavor. Because like we talked about on BTL yesterday, had this been handled like any other sport and handled like in any other situation where a high-profile figure like Dana White gets caught, and this is not Dana White was arrested for allegedly doing this. We saw it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that she hit him first. He's 125 pounds heavier than her. He's probably on some stuff. He's talked about being on TRT and all this stuff. I think that video interview with the doctor, no, I'll never buy that. You'll never, ever convince me that he is in the right in any way. I give him credit for saying, stop defending me. But if the UFC had just come out and made a statement, and Endeavor had come out and made a statement saying, quote, we don't condone this. We have talked to Dana White about this. We are working on some sort of reprimand or repercussion for him. We will let you know. Or if they came out and gave the punishment and just said, hey, Dana's going to step aside for 6 months. He's going to donate. He's going to pay a hefty fine. It's going to go all towards a DV charity. He's going to do a PSA, and he's going to do counseling. If that just happened, if they just came out and said, we don't condone this from anybody within our organization, punishment TBD, we're probably still talking about it again when the punishment is revealed, but we're not harping on this. We're not judging any, we're not talking about this as much as we are. So don't blame us for talking about it. Don't blame us for this still being a story. Blame them. Blame them. If they just handled this the way they should have from Jump Street, we're not talking about it as much because it shows that they give a fuck and that they care. And they're not setting scary and negative precedents. We're not talking about it that much. If a question came up here and there on this show, yeah, we would discuss it, but you think I'd be monologuing about Dana if they just handled this the right way? It's okay. I give Dana some credit because he's handled this better than anybody. There are some misses for sure. The punishment thing, that it punishes everybody else and not me, I don't buy that. That was a big miss. But for the most part, the don't defend me thing was great, needed to be said, and I respect the hell out of him, and I appreciate the fact that he said that on his own before he was even asked about it. The Slap Fight League should not be a thing. It shouldn't have been a thing to begin with, but now it certainly shouldn't be a thing. But I don't even blame Dana for how this is being handled. I blame the UFC and Endeavor. And I'll say this one last time. If they just did this right, this is not a story. We're not even, it's a story, but we're not talking about it as much. We would probably stop talking about it altogether until the punishment was revealed. Then we would talk about it again. And then it would go away until Dana came back. And then when Dana comes back for his first event after his suspension, it would come up again. This is Dana's first thing back. He would be asked about it at the press conference. What did you learn? How has your life changed? How has counseling been? And then that's it. But instead, we're going to keep talking about this because this has been handled like shit by them. And this is not Dana. We're not talking about Dana. He's addressed it. I'm talking about the company. And unfortunately, this is going to continue to be a talking point. And it's going to come full circle once this happens somewhere else within the organization. Whether it's a fighter or an employee, it's going to be a big thing. It's going to be a big deal, and then it's going to happen. It's just going to be wild. And Jed made an interesting point, and I respect him for making this point. And we're all hopeful that it's not, that this never happens. But what if this happens again? What if something happens again and it's caught on video and Dane is involved? You are screwed. Screwed. So all of the venom doesn't go to Dana. It goes to the UFC and it goes to Endeavor. Dana has gotten out in front of this and he's handled it. Are there things he says that I don't agree with? Yep. But can you give him at least some credit for getting out there and trying to address it? Yeah, I give him credit for that. But I don't care. I didn't need to hear from Dana. We heard from Dana with the TMZ interview. We don't need to hear from him. We need to hear from everybody else. And that's all we're asking. This story goes away once they do that. I don't get it. Like, I just don't get it. It's clear what they're trying to do. They want it to go away. But if it would go away if they just did the right thing. This is, it's not rocket science. Just do what you're supposed to do from a PR perspective. We as a company don't condone what Dana did. Punishment TBD. If you just put that out there, we're not talking about this anymore. We will write an article that you actually responded, and then we're going to move away from it until the penalty is released. And it doesn't even have to be anything crazy. It can be a month. Dana's out for a month and all the other things I laid out. And that's the minimum that should happen. But that's not, we're not asking for a lot here. Accountability, baby. That's it.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to the Gambler's Inferno. How you doing?
Like three rapid fires real quick. I was wondering, what is the likelihood that UFC returns to Paris this year? And then, like, how high were the UFC on Jeff Molina before his suspension? And if you could go into detail of the correlation of Jimmy Flick's divorce and him coming back to compete. And then last but not least, what do you think Glover will be retired by the end of the year? And if he does win on the pay-per-view, is this the first time two champs have been in the same gym before? And I don't really count Izzy and Alex, because Alex is more of a CKB like affiliate and he's with Joe Lopez and stuff. So yeah, that's all I got. Those three quick questions.
Thanks, man. Yeah, there's been champions in the same gym quite a bit. CKB's had them. The gym in Denver with, Rose Kamaru and Rose and Kamaru with champions together. Trevor Whitman, AKA had a whole bunch of champions at the same time. So it has happened before. It's happened numerous times throughout the years. Trying to remember the other questions. Will Glover retire by the end of the year? It's possible, but we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. I mean, you would think that we'll have more of an idea of where this goes after next Saturday, because I do think he's going to beat Jamal Hill. Is there a chance Jamal knocks him out? Sure. But I think Glover could knock Jamal out. And I honestly think that if Glover gets this thing to the ground, it's going to be a really bad night for Jamal Hill. It's going to be a tough one for him. Being at home is a big deal. I think everything kind of favors Glover. And then they'll probably try to wait for Jiří to come back. If he can come back by the end of the year, they'll try to run that one back. And then we'll see. If he beats Jiří, then they'll probably do a third one, and he'd probably stick around for that. But my hunch is that he's kind of in that Ric Flair WWE cycle where Vince McMahon basically told him, like, you're going to wrestle until you lose, and then once you lose, you're out. And I kind of feel like maybe that's how Glover is handling this at this point. He's just going to fight until he loses. If he loses to Jamal Hill, he's not getting another title fight. And at least for a while, unless some things fall his way. But that's two straight losses and two straight title fights. We got other guys there. It's going to be tough to get him back in there. So I think a lot of that depends on Saturday, next Saturday. The Jeff Molina thing, I mean, look, there's a lot to this. We've been digging into this for months now. And this story is not going to get any better. It's going to get a lot worse. So stay tuned for that. I'm pretty confident in that at this point. And they were pretty high on Jeff Molina. I mean, he was a ranked guy. They were high on him coming out the Contender Series. Bright kid. Now he fought on the Contender Series without his team. His team all got COVID and they couldn't come. And he just showed up and won. And that was a crazy-ass fight, too. And he's looked good in the UFC. So I would say they were decently high on him. But I don't know. He's about to hit that Nevada Athletic Commission meeting. I think it's next week, and he's already suspended by them, and we'll see if more comes out from that in regards to the James Krause stuff. And then if you want news on Jimmy Flick, you have to go back in kind of the archives of the MMA Fighting YouTube channel, because we broke the news that Jimmy was coming out of retirement. We broke the news that he was getting back into the USADA pool, and then I interviewed him like immediately after. So if you want to go back and check that interview out, he kind of lays out the decision and how it all came to be and the divorce and all that stuff. So that's probably your best bet at this point. It was a little while ago, but if you just go on our page and search for Jimmy Flick retirement or decision to end retirement or whatever, you'll get a full response from him. Let's keep going. Bull, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Why is Dustin Poirier doing everything in his power to avoid Beneil Dariush?
All right. So this has been a pretty popular topic. And I want to choose how I put my words together here. I don't fully blame Dustin Poirier. And to be clear, if you go back and listen to that scrum where he said the things that he said, most of it, at least to me, was about the timing. Because Dustin was very open and honest about the fight with Michael Chandler being kind of a hindrance on not only his schedule, but his family's. Because his daughter is in school, and for him to go and do a full camp preparing for a fight, they basically have to pull his daughter out of school so that she can come along for the trips, and it kind of messes with the routine. And as a dad myself, I understand completely how much getting out of a routine can affect a child, because my kid is a super positive, happy-go-lucky kid. But when things change outside of his realm, he falls apart a little bit. If he has a substitute teacher at school, he kind of falls apart a little bit. And I totally get where he's coming from. And in that scrum after the fact, he was asked about that fight in particular, about doing it maybe in Perth because Makhachev and Volkanovski was looking, I think they announced it right before 281 that fight was going to happen. And he basically said, nah, doesn't get me excited. But he also said that, look, I can't pull my daughter out of school again this year. I'm probably not fighting again until July. So to me, if the UFC, and I don't think Beneil's going to wait till July to fight. Why would he? The fight makes sense, 100%. Definitely makes sense. But it just doesn't seem like Poirier is going to fight before the summer. He said it. He's already said it. Can't pull my daughter out of school again. It's too much. I'll probably come back in July. Now, Benny wants to wait till July. I think he'd do it. But Poirier's got other options ahead of him as well. And you can make a strong case that even though Dariush is on this run, we're looking at it from a UFC perspective. There, you can make a clear argument that if it comes to, and the UFC is looking, let's just say Makhachev beats Volkanovski and they're looking for the next challenger. From a meritocratic standpoint, it's Beneil Dariush. But from a pay-per-view buy drawing standpoint, which fight is going to do better on pay-per-view? Islam Makhachev versus Beneil Dariush or Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier? And the answer, by a long shot, is Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier. It's not even close. And it's not right, but they are a business. And Poirier's got a shot to get a title shot right now. Why would he fight Dariush? Poirier could just fight Conor McGregor, who's coming back potentially sometime this year, and make a floppity jillion dollars and probably beat the hell out of Conor McGregor. Got to take care of your family, man. It's a better option for him. So he's got options. Looks like the UFC wants Justin Gaethje versus Rafael Fiziev in March at some point. He could get the winner of that fight. Like, who? Poirier could fight Gaethje again. I'm sure that fight would get him up. If Fiziev somehow goes out there and just knocks Justin Gaethje out, Poirier would be excited for that fight. So he's got options. He's not doing everything to avoid Beneil, but Dustin's kind of gotten to the big kids table at this point. He's at the adult table. It's about putting money in the bank, and yeah, he'd like to get to a title fight, but the way the UFC does business and the way Poirier is loved by most people, he might already be the guy. Who knows? It would not shock me in any way if they just went right to Poirier fighting for the belt. Even over Dariush, and that would make a lot of people upset. I'd be upset about that. Because poor Benny deserves it. But Benny did not do himself any favors. Remember how we just talked a little earlier about Bilal Muhammad and his post-fight interviews? Not calling out Khamzat when he had the chance and then didn't get the fight? Benny kind of shot himself in the foot after UFC 280. Gets this big win over Mateusz Gamrot. Could have called out Islam in a respectful way. Again, he's not a big trash talker. He's not going to say, hey, Islam, you stole everything I worked for, MF-er. But he could have been like, hey, Islam, you said in recent interviews that I'm the guy. If I win this fight and you win the belt, I'm the guy. Well, Habib is a man of his word. Are you a man of yours? If he just said that, he's in a much better spot. But what did he say? I'll fight 10 more guys before I fight for the belt. That was bad. That was really, really bad. And he could do all the other interviews he wants now, but people are going to remember that he said, I will fight 10 more guys. And in the UFC's mind, they're like, okay, then you're going to have to fight 10 more guys. He's in a tough spot right now. He's probably going to have to fight a murderer next, an up-and-comer. And it's not fair, but that's probably where he's at right now, and it sucks. But it's a business.
Let's go to Mikey. Hi, Mikey.
Yes. As for Stephen A. Smith's thoughts on Dana White, listen, this is the same guy that like 10, 12 years ago when Ray Rice was caught on camera punching his wife, he actually had the audacity to blame women about it. Like, oh, sometimes women might deserve it. So let's get that one out the way. As for the Beneil Dariush, Dustin Poirier thing, I don't know what it is with MMA fans and certain people that just refuse to see what to do. Listen, Dustin Poirier's been in the UFC, what, a dozen years? He fought every... The guy finally took an esteemed position in the UFC, and he wants to call his shot, finally, and now he's ducking people? Get the fuck out of here. Pardon my language. Listen, I respect Beneil Dariush's run. He has earned a title shot, but let's... But he and Dustin are not on the same plane of stature. You know, one is an established star. The other hasn't yet. So, yeah, it's going to sound quote-unquote unfair, but is it really unfair? Who's Beneil Dariush? He's been in the UFC about, what, 5-6 years. He's now finally broken through as a top guy. Whose fault is that? You know, he had his chances. He had his fight against Edson Barboza, got knocked out. Had high-profile bouts and then kind of put up a stinker. And then, like you just said, he had a chance to call out Islam. But what did he do? Say some weird stuff, and we're just like, yeah, I'll take whatever the UFC gives me. Like, come on, dude. You step in it, and then you wonder why you're not getting a chance. And then for him and Armin to try and play the PR game saying, well, hey, if these guys just want to, like, fight, if the top five just wants to fight each other, as if they wouldn't do that themselves if they were in the top five. Listen, Charles, Justin, Gaethje, and Dustin Poirier have all worked to put themselves in position where they are no more than one or two wins from a title shot. Charles Oliveira, if he fights Beneil Dariush, does Charles Oliveira need to fight six, win, beat six more people to get a title shot? Absolutely not. If he smokes Dariush, he gets his rematch. We all know this. Why are people acting dumb? Anyways, that'll be all for tonight. See you guys later.
Yeah, and, you know, Oliveira has said publicly that March or April seems like a good time frame for him. So there's your fight. There's your fight. Take the attention off of Dustin Poirier, who has, like I said, I'm probably not fighting again until July after the school year. If Chucky Olives is ready March or April, you do everything in your power to get that fight, because that's the one. Dariush fights Charles Oliveira and beats him, he's getting a title shot. That win gets him over the hump for sure. Matoush Gamrot, I love the guy. I have a ton of respect for him. I'm a big Matoush Gamrot fan. The dude is so good. Great fighter. He's going to be a top 10 guy in this division for a long time. It's a good win. A respectable win. But most people don't really know who he is. Hardcores know exactly who he is. They just look at the numbers next to the name. Dariush beat a guy ranked behind him who's only had a few UFC fights. That's what the casual fan sees. To me, I was like, that's a great win. He didn't have to take that fight, and he took it. But we all kind of put our eyes on, what is he going to do after? If he wins, what's he going to say? And he said nothing that helped his case. So, it's a game. You got to play the game. You got to play the game. The post-fight interview is super important. I see my guys at Cage Titans in here. And Aaron Hughes had a little post-fight interview saying that I'm not going to repeat it. You can go find it. It was pretty cool. Aaron Hughes kind of went viral with his post-fight interview. People were talking about it. Morning Combat was talking about it. Other people were talking about it. Like, it's important. Doesn't matter what your record is. Doesn't matter who you beat. That post-fight interview can change things in a big way based on what you say. Whether it's fun or you're trying to climb the ladder or trying to get a title fight, whatever it is. But you going out there and saying, now, if this is your debut or it's your second UFC fight, and you want to say, look,
I'm new to the game, new to the UFC. I'm not in a position to call anybody out. Like, if you have somebody ranked around where you're at, you can do that. But if you want to play the I'll fight whoever the UFC puts in front of me game, cool. I'm all right with that. But when you get to, like, the top 10, you got to play the game. You got to play the game. The whole thing of, eh, if UFC wants me to fight whoever, I'll fight him. No. You see Drew Dober? Drew Dober got that big win. Very respectful guy. How could you not like Drew Dober? First team, all handsome. Big smile. Happy-go-lucky guy. Exciting fighter. Would love to fight Michael Chandler. Knows it probably won't happen. He's being realistic, so he had another name in mind. I'll fight Jalen Turner. Let's go. And what did Jalen Turner do? Immediately went on Twitter and said, book this Jason House. Let's go. You got to have names. You can't just say, I'll fight 10 more guys. Because the UFC's and the fans are going to be like, all right, well, he's going to fight 10 more guys. He should be focusing all his attention on Chucky Olives right now. Go get that fight. Go beat him, and then you can say whatever you want afterwards. Just don't say, I'll fight 10 more guys. Say, all right, I just beat the former champion. It's my time. Give me the damn title shot. And he'll probably get it. But if he fights Poirier, he ain't doing it till the summer. So what's the point? Oliveira's out there doing interviews saying March or April. Go get it. Go get that fight. Let's go to Shanuka. Shanuka, are you there? You're muted. Okay. Nothing from Shanuka. All right. So I think we're done. We've got a nice little hour, free-for-all Friday stuff. Talked about a little bit of everything. And another week of the show is in the books. Back next week, Tuesday, 10 a.m. Eastern, we'll do it again. We'll recap UFC Vegas 67. We will be in the middle of UFC 283 fight week. Getting ready for those two title fights. The UFC's return to Brazil. We'll talk about that and much more. So I appreciate you all very much. We will be live at 3 p.m. Eastern on the MMA Fighting Twitter, or not Twitter, the MMA Fighting YouTube channel for the first UFC preview show of the year. Myself, AK, the Prince of Positivity, and Mr. No Gray Area, Jed Meshew, will join us. And we will preview UFC Vegas 67 and take some of your questions as well. People's pre-fight show back tomorrow, 3:30. p.m. Eastern time, so you can join us for that on the YouTube channel. Jose Youngs will be in the building for that event, so we'll have post-fight stuff, interviews, press conferences perhaps, and then AK and I will be back on Sunday for On to the Next One. So back to the grind, everybody. So enjoy the rest of your Friday. We'll see you at 3 p.m. Eastern for the preview show. Have a great rest of your day, and as always, have a heck of a morning, everybody.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.